have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
All right. So you have in your packet, you have the meeting minutes. There is a motion required to approve minutes. We have an approval for the minutes.
All in favor to approve?
Goodbye, 2 seconds.
All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Same sign. Motion carries. Moving on to staff reports. In your packet, attachment 3A, Curtis will speak.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to Mr. Joe Paradise for realizing our initial mail-out. We had included last year's March 31st progress report. The existing one was inserted into the packets that were handed out today. Attachment 3A, we spent about 47% of the budget and are in good shape for the fiscal year. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Again, a motion is required.
All in favor to approve?
Paradise, second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Any folks against it, say aye. Motion carries. 3B, technical progress report. Matt?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. Just a few quick things for you. One that I'm excited about is we are in the process of updating our bike map. Actually, we're having a consultant do it. And I think what we're going to end up with is a much more user-friendly map that not only would be a pretty good marketing tool, but will actually be useful for people that are riding around trails and roadways in our network. So look for that probably around mid to late June. We hope to get it printed by then. I just wanted to mention real quick that I've been talking for, well, since I've been here about Safe Streets for All. The implementation grants are due next week. I'm aware of two communities within our region that are applying for that, so for both implementation and one of them for some supplemental planning activities, too. So certainly you're excited to see how that turns out. And then the last thing I just wanted to mention, connecting communities. You might remember at the March meeting that New Franklin and Akron in Summit Lake neighborhood both got planning studies. So we had the kickoff for Akron this week. Next week is New Franklin. So Heather's been leading that effort, but those are both getting going. So other than that, it's been a busy season. We're very deep into our input documents for the long-range plan and all of that good stuff. So, and you'll hear about some of the other projects we have going on here later in the meeting. But that's all I have, but I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Amy Grader will discuss attachment 3C, AMAT's federal funds report.
Thank you. So since this memo came out, a few projects have slipped from 24 into 25. We've actually moved those projects already. We've cleaned up a lot of projects after the project review meeting we had on May 1st. We did have one project that bid really high. We had 15% requested, and we did give them the 15%, so they should be able to proceed and get encumbered this year, so that's good. Just a note, there were a couple of projects in STBG. I'm not going to point out communities, but if you don't have a PID number on this sheet and you don't know you've received a PID number and you haven't submitted your information, that needs to be submitted as soon as possible. I'd like to get PIDs by the end of this fiscal year for sure. So, but we're in pretty good shape. Everything is pretty clean for the end of the year. So as soon as the last few projects sell, we should be good to close out the year and prepare for fiscal year 2025. Any questions?
Actually, Amy,
yes.
We wanted to make a comment about project cost increase for fiscal year 2025. And just the likelihood of them might be lower in the future,
yeah.
Us being able to award project cost increases just based on over programming and availability. So we just wanted to let everyone know. We've tried to accommodate all of the increased, we know projects were selling way up, but we may not have budget in 25 to just be able to say, yeah, everybody's going to be able to get 15%. We actually have run into some issues with ODOT in our loan process, more not so much about the money itself, but some of the things they require for us to be able to do for them to give loans. So we are going to be watching that and trying not to get ourselves past the point of, say, you know, $2 million in the negative or something like that. So just
we're
be...
already that far in the hole next year.
Right. So just be forewarned, fiscal year 2025. We might not be able to be as generous with cost increases.
Yeah. And unfortunately, unless money comes down from on high, we're probably not going to be able to move projects up unless something major breaks in the system. So just to give you guys an idea, I know a lot of PDIP projects are hoping to move up into 25, 26. The likelihood of that is pretty slim. As projects do come in over, or unless something, like I say, something major slips. But anyways, so, you know, just to give everybody a heads up, we'll try to move as quick as we can if there's PDIP money, you know, to be had. But, you will get to keep the PDIP if you met the requirements, so it'll still be a 90-10 split. So there's still the benefit there, even if you don't get to move up. So, any other questions?
Thank you, Amy. Moving on to old business, and that active transportation plan. Heather will speak to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 4A is the draft of the final draft of the Active Transportation Plan, or ACT. As a reminder, the ACT is an input document for the next long-range transportation plan. In January, committee members were asked to assist. I did the same thing. To assist in updating a map of the future shared use path recommendations. In March, these draft recommendations were made available for public comments. Along with strategies and goals, these draft recommendations were approved in March by the Policy Committee for inclusion in the final Active Transportation Plan. The final draft of the 2024 Active Transportation Plan has been placed on the MS website for your review. At this time, staff is requesting approval of the Active Transportation Plan. Does anyone have any questions?
Motion is required.
Move to approve. Collins.
All in second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposing, same sign. Old business B, AMAS area-wide roundabout study. Matt Stewart will present.
Great, thank you. So third time's the charm. I'm going to talk here about roundabouts. Hopefully you've had a chance to review the memo that went out in your packets. Maybe you've even had a chance to look at the draft plan up on our website. But I thought I'd give a kind of a quick summary of what this is all about. So 7-ish years ago, our office had done some analysis, like pre- and post-crash comparison of what now are our older roundabouts. But we thought it was time to look into that, you know, kind of update some of those numbers. But this report is a little more comprehensive in that we're going into a lot of other aspects of roundabouts, both just kind of the general knowledge and then area specific. So I'm going to walk you through this real quickly. So Chapter 2 of our report is kind of that first general look. You can kind of think of this as like a crash course in what you, if you don't know already, what you might want to know about roundabouts. We did a lot of like the national research and just looking at just pros and cons of roundabouts, where to put them, where not to put them, all that kind of stuff, and summarize that really quickly. It's not a comprehensive design guide, of course, but just kind of some of the basic facts that you might want to know. the idea being that this is something that our communities can use as a resource if they're starting to consider the possibility of a referendum. But then in Chapter 3, we get into our area specific, and we start looking at the performance of our roundabouts, too. So I'll go into that in a second, but what we really focus in on are 28 of our roundabouts that are on our collector and arterial routes. But we also make sure we catalog other, you know, rotational devices like the Talmadge Circle here that you all just drove through, and you know, even those that are located like at Summit Mall. So we tried to capture every circular intersection that exists within our region, as well as immediately surrounding it. So when you look at the network, here's what it looks like. Obviously, we know, you know, so many of them are in green, but Akron, Kent area, out toward Montrose, Twinsburg. But you can kind of see, starting to see more and more pop up in different parts of our planning area. So like I said, the focus of Chapter 3 is those 28 existing roundabouts. We took a deeper dive on those. And this is just an example of what one of the individual project sheets looks like. So, you know, we have imagery of before and after and some of the basic statistics on the roundabout in the upper left. And then we get into our crash analysis. And I'm guessing that that's probably of most interest to a lot of people in this room, so I was going to slow down a little and talk about some of the highlights with that. Okay, so out of that 28, we had 11 right off the bat that we excluded from our analysis. And for 9 of those 11, the reason for that is just because they're new. We don't have enough, or in some cases, any post data. We wanted to make sure we had at least 2 years of post data that we could compare pre and post. So assuming that we update this in the future, we'll be looking at all of these you see here. But those were excluded. Now, we still have whatever crash statistics, you know, we have, but we just didn't do the full analysis. We also had a couple that weren't intersections before, one of which isn't even really an intersection now, but a roundabout still exists there. So those were excluded for obvious reasons. The remaining 17, we kind of had two different methodologies that we went into. For our roundabouts that are newer but not brand new, we used our post-2012 data. The data that we feel we can really hang our hats on, it's the cleaned up data, it's really good, you know. It's what we use for our annual crash reports and all that kind of stuff. We also have several roundabouts, I believe 8, were built before 2012, so before this data window, as well as 2 that were built shortly after that. For those, we pulled into older, we used that 2012 through 22 data, but we also pulled in older data from ODOT's GIS crash analysis. So just kind of like the statewide data that exists. A lot of this existed from before when AMETS had done a, you know, smaller scale roundabout comparison analysis. And so we use those two methodologies depending on when the roundabout was built. For obvious reasons, we skipped the year or years of construction when we were looking at crash analysis. We had a lot of internal conversations about how to handle or when to start collecting data again. And what we landed on is, let's skip the whole first year after the roundabout opens. The argument being that, you know, people are still getting used to that. Traffic conditions may not quite be normal as people learn how to use the new intersection. So that's what we landed on. And so on all of the sheets, those will just be the rows that are highlighted in red. And then what we do is we just sorted them into our 4 categories. An important caveat with that, though, is that serious injury crashes, really that serious injury category, we have data post-2019 on that. So the serious injuries were lumped in with other injury crashes. So just wanted to point that out. And so just here's kind of a snapshot of what we ended up with, just sorting crashes based on their overall crash performance. Those highlighted in pink are the ones where we did that like extended data window where we used the old GCAT data going back before 2012. And so the big takeaways from this are that Injury crashes improved on 15 of the 17 roundabouts. So pleased to see that. Our PDO crashes, it was about half and half. Nine improved, eight did not. It's actually a little better than maybe I would have expected. You know, I don't think too many people would argue that minor crashes necessarily get reduced with roundabouts. The idea of building a roundabout is really about eliminating or greatly reducing some of those most serious crashes. But so our PDOs, our property damage only crashes, did go down on more than half of the roundabouts. And it was the same for our overall. 9 out of 17 improved. Most or more than half of the ones that didn't improve overall, they were still just, you know, modest increases in crashes. So that's just kind of a snapshot of what our crash analysis looks like for those 17 that we were able to analyze. Then, just kind of wrapping up the plan, chapter four, so it's really more of kind of like a best practices guide for local governments. So we as staff have had many conversations with many of our communities over the years, including several just, you know, recently as we were finalizing this plan. We picked the brains of some of our communities that kind of shared their best practices and lessons that they've learned. I did my best when we were writing this to, you know, try to not make it sound preachy, but it is a little bit more qualitative. These are, you know, just things that we've learned overall. So the idea being that, say you're a community that doesn't have a roundabout and you're thinking about putting one in someday, these are just things you might want to consider as a starting point, as you're starting to plan. And then the last half of that chapter, finally, is just kind of highlighting the funding options that are out there. The Carbon Reduction Program, or CRP being new, we all know that that's been a great source to fund roundabouts. ODOT is, you know, ODOT Safety loves roundabouts. There's a lot of money out there for funding them through that. So we just highlight some of the sources of funding that are typically used to fund roundabouts and try to give you information on when to apply, how to apply, project cost limits, things like that. So that's pretty much a quick overview of the study itself. You know, we did not make a formal commitment within the report to saying we're going to update this every 4 years or 5 years, but I think that's the intention. We've kind of set it up in a way that we can easily update this as more data comes in. And I think it'll only get better as we get, you know, more data in future years. I'll be very curious to see how some of our more complex multi-lane roundabouts perform, you know, over the next 5 years. But that's it in a nutshell. But I'd be happy to answer any questions. And I guess what we're looking for is recommendation of approval of this study. Thank you. Yeah, Joe.
Yeah, I have a question. I remember, I would have picked 7 years ago, but I do remember when this was a newer phenomena, and our reality was that I think I remember correctly that roundabouts wouldn't solve every problem, and one of the factors was volume. And I'm just wondering if it's probably too soon for most of the roundabouts around here, but for the older ones, is there any staff consideration that maybe they're reaching their limit, if you will, in terms of how much traffic they can handle before there's more wear and accidents and that sort of thing?
Are you talking just from a safety perspective, or just traffic volume?
Yeah, just from an ability to handle the traffic as roundabouts are designed to do. And I'm just wondering, you know, could there be scenarios where all of a sudden there's too much traffic coming in to a roundabout where it becomes a concern?
Certainly, and that can obviously affect the design of a roundabout. You know, there are kind of rough parameters in place where you might want to build bigger, although generally we would caution the smaller and simpler the better. Larger roundabouts tend to have more issues because there's more opportunity for confusion and that sort of thing. But there are limits to that. I don't think from a volume perspective, you know, I think I'd like to say that the guidance is fairly well settled, like before a roundabout is built, you know, have a good expectation of how it's going to manage traffic and that sort of thing. But you are going to see a difference in the types of crashes and, of course, the severity of crashes as you see it around the world. But you're absolutely right that it's not, there is no one solution that works for every intersection. You know, we would, I don't think anyone would argue roundabouts should be everywhere. You know, it's, there are a lot of special circumstances that have to align, but it can be a very effective solution. So I don't know if that answers your question or...
No, I was just...
But it's
more or less learning, I guess.
Yeah.
My question, so.
Any other questions?
Mike? Yeah, I just appreciate you doing this report. It'd be great to see the region incorporate more and more roundabouts, because there's no question of their safety and efficiency is unmatched by any other type of intersection control.
Yeah, I mean, generally that's true. And I know it's kind of mentioned as sort of a footnote in the report, but it's kind of interesting, and I know I've talked with you, Mike, like you guys are actually doing some conversion of a few of your traffic circles to function more like roundabouts. So, you know, there are other creative things you can do sometimes like that. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Matt. A motion is requested.
Motion to approve Collins.
Jones, second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposing, same sign. Motion carries. New business. Resolution 2024-10. And Heather will present.
Attachment 6A, Resolution 2024-10, is the final transportation planning work program and budget for AMS fiscal year 2025. This begins in July of this year. A draft of the work program was approved in January by the policy committee, which is then submitted to ODOT for review. After receiving comments from both ODOT and FHWA, the major elements of the plan remain the same. Therefore, AMS staff is requesting approval of the fiscal year 2025 transportation planning work program and budget. Happy to answer any questions. Yes?
Look at table one and table two.
Yeah.
Looking around the room with a lot of new faces. And I'm not sure if I understand how we put this together. We have revised our fee per person per community every year.
It's never
up and down. And look at the fact that our total agency on the amount is $3 million. Kind of carryover of almost $1 million.
That's an estimate.
It's an estimate, it's still $1 million carried over to put someplace else. How's this put together? How do we stop carrying over such large numbers?
Well,
should we carry over any money?
That might be a question about carryover. That's probably a question for someone else. But I can tell you that if you're asking specifically about local share, that is based on what we receive from the feds. So we take a percentage of that per community to come up with what that dollar amount would be. So we have to match to 10% locally. That's why that dollar amount is. So that's why it changes every year because the amount that we receive from the feds changes every year. Does that answer?
I think to Joe's bigger question is that from the standpoint of how much budget we're spending every year. So one of the biggest challenges that we come across is that obviously labor is the biggest expense. And when you have the turnover and the current job market that we have right now, particularly and retirements, we've had a hard time filling some of those positions. which is part of why we're trying to get more contract money out there to spend. And so I know we've got like our signal inventory, the Connected Communities program, those things are trying to make up the difference while at the same time also, you know, looking to try to hire new staff and get them in the system so that, and then have them stay. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to put more money out on the street. Sometimes it's not as easy as it should be in terms of contracting and RFQ processes. It makes it slow. So similar to like our PMG contract that we do with our signal, or I mean our pavement conditions, it's like those are the type of projects we're trying to get out there as part of the work program. And we've tried to do that with our signal inventory that's in this work program. Spend $150,000 to inventory all our signals. Those are the things that we're trying to do to make sure that we're spending the money and not give any back to the feds, which at this point we don't. We're able to carry it over and keep spending it. But those are the challenges that we're facing right now.
That's what I wanted the rest of the room to hear.
I'm sorry?
That's what I wanted the rest of the room to hear.
Yes, so that's where we are right now.
Everybody thinks, well, says, why are we carrying over $1 million? And we had discussions earlier about we can't fund the extra 15%.
Oh, well, yeah. And then the other problem with that is that those are two totally different sources of funding. So AMETS is given through the federal government what's called Consolidated Planning Grant Funds. And what the work program does, this project that we're approving, or the program that we're approving, only focuses on the funds that it can only fund planning work. So it cannot fund engineering. It's illegal. It cannot fund right away. It cannot fund construction. So it's a completely different pot of money than the money when Amy comes up to speak and talks about our 3C. That pot of money is our STBG, CMAC, TASA money. Again, different programs than those are infrastructure-only programs. So one of the things that, you know, it's like we're always managing two different sets of books. We're managing the infrastructure money, and then we're managing the planning money. So this document focuses on the planning money. The documents that you see from Amy focus on the infrastructure part of it. And unfortunately, if we could, we would pull some of that money and give the 15% because that would be a great way to spend it quickly, but we are not allowed to do that. So.
I think I know the answer to this, but in Table 1, the AMETS local share,
yes. That's
driven by what the feds telling you the match should be.
Yes.
That's why it's not going to match the local share based on the other number is 198.
Yes, so we have always bumped that number. We have always bumped that. Well, I guess we didn't last year, but we tend to put in a little bit extra every year for the match. So it is a little bit higher. That 198 doesn't try necessarily to put the new one.
Thank you, Heather. A motion is required.
All in favor.
Paradise, second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. All right, Matt will present 2024-11, reaffirming the approval of the Regional Transportation Plan.
Okay, thank you. This is an annual resolution, something we do each year, and all it is something that we do in order to remain certified as a Metropolitan Planning Organization. So this resolution reaffirms AMETS approval of the 2045 transportation, long-range transportation plan. It also reaffirms the existing TIP and affirms the consistency of both of these documents with the state implementation plan for air quality compliance. So the staff would recommend, obviously, the approval of resolution 2024-11.
Seeing no questions, a motion is required.
Motion to approve, Collins.
Kovacic, second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. And Matt, you're going to present the next one.
Yes, and this is also an annual requirement. With this resolution, the policy committee, or the TAC, certifies that the EMS transportation planning process is being implemented in compliance with all applicable federal requirements. EMS activities are carried out under the continuing supervision of our partners at the Ohio Department of Transportation, and the staff recommends approval of 2024-12. So are there any questions on this?
Thank you, Matt. Motion is required.
Pauling, move to approve.
Paradise, second.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Other motion carries. And Matt will present 2024-13, newly awarded funds.
Yeah, so this is attachment 16. This resolution seeks to add recently awarded federal funds to the TID for Metro and Florida. These funds are being awarded through ODOT's Transit Partnership Program, ODOT's Workforce Mobility Program, and ODOT EPA Mutual Emissions Reduction Program. All three programs are competitive and provide additional funds for the area. The majority of funds are state attributable highway funds that are being flexed over for transit use. A full listing of the awarded projects and their budget is provided in the attachment 16. The awards for this year total approximately $5.1 million. Staff is requesting approval of resolution 2024-13.
Thanks, Matt. Motion is required.
Motion to approve Collins.
Pauling, second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Last agenda item, resolution 2024, approving the amendment number 7, fiscal year 2024-27 Transportation Improvement, Amy.
Thank you. This resolution is to amend the TIP, and it is to add three projects, revise one project funding, and move it from group to individual, and delete one project. We will be adding the High Bridge project, for Summit County, and then River City Heritage Trail Phase 3, and Summit Pedestrian Improvements. Both those last two were just approved back in January. They got a bid number, so now they are getting added to the TIP. Also, the revising of State Route 39 Alternative Transportation, that originally was a group project on ODOT's list. It moved to individual when it was not in that funding. And then the deletion of one project is just deleting the projects from the current TIP. It was actually combined in a year outside the TIP. So this project is being deleted, but it's actually just combining with a project outside of the TIP. So it's the money's just moving. Anyone have any questions?
Seeing no questions. A motion is required.
Garitano, move approval.
Pauling, second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposing, same sign. Motion carries. We'll move on to other business.
All right, so AMETS does have a little bit of other business. As some of you may be aware, we've talked about before, we are unveiling a new website soon, hopefully this summer. We had hoped to do it. Our plan is in August to do a walkthrough of the website to show you how it works, but because it might go live during the summer months, we kind of wanted to just give you a heads up that if you sometime go to AMATS planning, it might look a little different. So we're in the final stages of that, and Heather is just going to do a real brief show you some pictures. There's a new logo. You know, so if that doesn't get you excited on this dreary day and get your energy up, like, I don't know what would. Like.
Other business. All right. So our next meeting will be August 1st. Same time, same place.
Yep.
We'll adjourn. All right. We need a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Roger.
Second, Collins.
Collins, second. All in favor, say aye.
Yeah.
Aye.